Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated weekly design show. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan, standing in for Josh Fennett this week, who's still over in Singapore. You can look forward to his design report from that city in coming weeks here on Section D. On today's show, we bring you a choice selection of interviews from Maison et Objet, Europe's interior design trade fair that's just wrapped up in Paris.
This chair started with a competition for a Latin American chair. The idea was to represent the essence of the craftsmanship in South America and using materials that came from nature.
We speak to the women behind Argentinian design studio Machimbre about how to grow while staying faithful to your brand. We survey a strong showing from a design underdog. Monocle's Nolan Giles speaks to some of the Taiwanese designers looking to forge a design identity of their own. And a Danish designer tells us how he's giving classic furniture designs an updated, sustainable twist. Plus,
for me, shed design came out of a growing interest in small-scale design.
I speak to author Jane Field Lewis about her new book, The Anatomy of Sheds. It looks at the design behind one of the most simple forms of small-scale architecture. All that coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. The Parisian Fair may well have introduced an American and Asian version, but Maison et Objet's European edition has managed to maintain the leading spot in its roster. And a distinctly international flavour as well. Brands from Taiwan to the US keep coming to Paris to get a foot into the European market, while designers grace the halls to find like-minded producers that can propel their prototypes forward. We're going to begin our series of interviews from the show by speaking to Buenos Aires-based trio Machimbre. They team up with Argentinian artisans to make their iron and nautical cord chairs entirely by hand, one by one. Yet, for their handsome M5 model, art director Julieta Barrionuevo and architects Zelmira Frères and Michelle Parisiers are looking to shift the production's relaxed Latin American pace up a gear, while remaining faithful to their Argentine heritage. Here, they talk to Chiara Romella about their brand story and ambitions.
So you three together make up Machimbre. Can you tell us about the brand? When was it born? How was it born? What brought you all together to create this?
It was born 3 years ago. We were planning to make a little collective where we could put all our creativity together and mix in different disciplines.
And what does the name of the brand mean?
There is macho that comes from male and embra that comes from female. But we use it comes as a concept because we are like merging different disciplines to create a whole thing.
How do you think the architectural background that you have comes through in the design of the furniture?
Architecture is really important to practice the way you look into things. It's just not designing a seat or a chair, it's designing something comfortable, something that you habit as a space in architecture. You're also using a chair to habit and to use and to transform into a place afterwards.
So let's talk about the chair itself. Can you describe it to us and what went into the design of it?
This chair started with a competition for a Latin American chair. The idea was to represent the essence of the craftsmanship in South America and using materials that came from nature, mixed together with something that could be industrialized, such as the iron. So we mixed these two materials together and we tried to also change a little bit the pattern of the weaving. That could make it a little bit modern, but still using the idea of the old traditional way of sitting down. So this chair is done in the typical delta from Tigre in Buenos Aires. And we started from a simple model. We made different versions of it. And now we integrated a new material to weave, which is a nautical cord or rope, if you want, that could be made in different colors and it is more artificial. But it still keeps the old pattern of weaving.
How is the Buenos Aires design scene? What's going on there? Did you study in Buenos Aires? And do you think it's a place where brands are happy to start off? Is it a young scene?
Buenos Aires is a very interesting city. It could be perfectly a first world country city. There is a lot of schools going on where they're inspired on European and American schools. We are evolving into something similar as the Northern Hemisphere, but we have so many opportunities because if we translate the weaving or the handcraft or the iron into modern design as the ones we have in Europe or in the United States, it attracts us a lot. That's why we're traveling to New York or to Paris to see where is the possibility for us to make that change or get that step done and be able to produce it better and produce it faster. About Latin America, everything goes a little bit like slower, and handcraft is so fantastic. And I think that foreign people that see our chairs, they look at it in a different way because they can see that there's something about hands going on the design. And Buenos Aires is a city where a lot of people of our age travel everywhere, and they get inspiration everywhere. And we try to translate it into Buenos Aires because everyone that comes there in love with the city is very eclectic.
I'd like to talk a bit more about you three. How did you meet, and how does working together work out in practical terms? How does a trio function?
At the beginning, we were just like three really young girls, like we just finished school and university, so it was like we were full of dreams, and the main thing that really kept us united was the idea of trying to be all the time learning from each other. We started day by day, like in different experiences. One day we were working on remodeling an apartment, and the other day we were shooting a fashion brand. So it's like, but the creative process was the same thing. So, and we do really, really good being three girls because it's not easy. And at the beginning, we started as little entrepreneurs to do everything. The three of us did everything. And then we really learned in time that we need to divide work.
We still try to keep the moments where we are designing something new. So whenever we get a new project, we have this moment where the three of us are just drawing and doing some brainstorming ideas, and we love that particular moment.
Finally, what do you think, when we look at this, what do you think shines through as something that we can point at and say that design is from Buenos Aires, that design is Argentinian?
Now I remind something about they told us in New York. There was when we see your chair, we see history behind it. So I think maybe the thing is the essence that brings up the chairs, like that, the history behind it. You just feel it.
Julieta Barrionuevo, Zelmira Frères, and Michelle Parisiers of Argentinian design brand Machimbre there, speaking to Monocle's Chiara Rumela. The designers behind Machimbre consider their designs to be infused with history. But it's time now to turn our attention to a nation not best known for its design heritage. Among a strong Asian showing at Maison et Objet this year, a generation of new Taiwanese designers were reimagining the notion of made in Taiwan. Monocle's new design editor, Nolan Giles, brings us this report.
Here at Maison et Objet, I've been drawn to both the sights and sounds of Taiwan's National Pavilion, where crowds have gathered to meet some of the most original exhibitors at this year's fair, including Jian Nanzuan of Aguchi Toys.
Okay, we are Aguchi Toys, and we produce some children's toy and also children's materials and children's furniture, because we are running the kindergarten in Taiwan. So that's why we produce something related to children. But since our designer, he's an artist, so now we produce a lot of children's toy, but it's more like a kind of art products. So that's why you can see our color and how it looks like.
Can you take us through some of these? They're very intricately designed and very, very sweet. What have we got here?
Okay, it's a music box. You can see a normal music box is like made by plastic. So we want to do something different. So we use the natural wood and put some very soft music. So you can hear from this. So when you hear this kind of music, you will feel, okay, I'm back to the kind of, you feel like a baby. So this is our purpose to produce this kind of products.
And where are you manufacturing everything? Is this all being made in Taiwan, in Taipei?
Yeah, it's all made in Taiwan. Yeah, but all the woods, since we are a tiny island, we don't have enough woods. So all the woods are imported from the other countries. But we made in Taiwan.
So what does this say about Taiwan at the moment? Is there lots of design happening? Is it a creative place to be right now?
Yeah, in Taiwan, we used to know, okay, Taiwan is quite famous by computer because our computer industry is very well, it's doing a brilliant job in the past. But now we want to do something different because, so that's why our governments, they are doing some, they want to do something creative, like to show the Taiwanese culture. So that's why our government sponsor this kind of, we are a small design company from Taiwan. So they sponsor us to come to Paris to show the design from Taiwan.
Away from the National Pavilion, there are a number of other Taiwanese design brands who forged their own paths to be here. Y Studio's carefully crafted brass and copper pens have won them a loyal following and the support of a number of top international design retailers, as Yanko and Yi Liao explain.
Hello, I'm Yanko from Y Studio. There are a lot of culture, a lot of different kind of lifestyle in Taiwan. So yeah, we've grown up in Taiwan and we meet these cultures. So we're doing this kind of products and we want to be, that's our product like Y Studio. And you can, yeah, like E to say, you can see other kind of brands. They also come from Taiwan and they have their own style. So I think it's the most interesting part of people comes from Taiwan.
It's very easy for us because we don't have to think about what is Taiwan. If I was a Japanese, I would do something like Japanese style. Yeah, people will say, wow, you are Japanese designed. But in Taiwan, no, we don't have to think about that. I think it's very good for us, and we are love to do some new Taiwanese style.
I've come past your stand two or three times today, and it's been very, very busy, a lot busier than many of the other stands. Why is it so busy? Why are people attracted to the product?
Actually, we don't know. But we're doing our work. We love our work, and we're doing the products. We really like it. We are really appreciate our own design. And I think when we trying to explain this concept and the design details, maybe that makes people fall in love with our product too. Yeah.
After admiring the classically designed pens of Y Studio, I wander over to the quirky Taipei brand Danzo, whose cast aluminium desk organizers demonstrate the eclecticism of Taiwan's design scene. Ai-Han Chan and Regine Lin from Danzo tell me more.
Well, we started last May. That was the first show in Paris. It was the Maison Object, and we found many, many clients from here around the world. So in 18 months, we are now selling in 18 countries. That's it's growing quite fast.
So what is it about the product that has made it successful?
Well, I think for example, for a landscape, we want to put imaginations and maybe you can say a kind of freedom to the users. And it's like an unfinished product that you can do something differently from person to person. So, for example, like the landscape, the idea is that I think there's always a lot of small gadgets on the table, and they're all different in size and shape. So I imagine that they're like small animals, and different kind of animals should have different kind of habitat. That's why I redesigned the lid, and then to make a box, like you can use it, a box inside and outside.
So going back to your brand as a Taiwanese brand, what does Taiwanese design stand for today?
For Taiwanese design, it's quite special because we don't really have we don't really limited by the culture, because we were living in a kind of like multicultural society. So it's very easy for designers to develop their thought in really, really different ways.
So would you say that Made in Taiwan as a tag now is evolving into a more of a design-focused name?
I think so. I think we will be proud that we call our product that we made in Taiwan.
Design, yeah. Designed and made in Taiwan. Yeah.
A report there on Taiwanese design at Maison et Objet from Monocle's Nolan Giles. Still to come on the show, we take a break from proceedings in Paris to interview author Jane Field Lewis about the design of sheds, a topic on which she's recently written a book. And we wrap up our Maison et Objet coverage by talking to a craftsman putting a new twist on classic Danish furniture design. All that still to come right here on Section D.
Whether you're thinking of founding your own nation or would like to make the one you live in a bit better, we have the book for you. The brand new How to Make a Nation, A Monocle Guide, is an informed and quietly provocative book about updating the art of statecraft. After 10 years of meeting inspiring citizens and on-it PMs, soft power influencers and smart architects, we'll tell you how to construct the perfect embassy, design a modern parliament, and even how to make the most of your national dress. This 340-page, large-format book delivers fresh thinking and lots of solutions too. It's a book about the small things that can make our nations work better for everyone that calls them home. Buy your copy today at monocle.com and all good bookstores. Go on, be the leader.
For a structure defined by the simplicity of its design and purpose, the humble shed has a rich history. From backyard tinkerers to literary greats, people from all walks of life have found their shed, the perfect place to bring their ideas to life. But what about the design of the sheds themselves? Jane Field Lewis is a stylist, art director and author based in London, and has recently written a book, The Anatomy of Sheds, that documents some of the most innovative shed designs from around the world. Jane joined me in the studio to talk about why sheds have such an enduring appeal, if there's such a thing as a shed vernacular, and of course, how exactly you define a shed.
For me, shed design came out of a growing interest in small-scale design. It started when I bought a vintage caravan and styled it up in a 1970s way. It was a 70s caravan. And from there, sheds grew as it was another small means of creative expression. It was an affordable, achievable way of doing a design project without a huge commitment of time or money.
And what is a shed exactly? Because looking through the extremely diverse range of structures which are in your book, The Anatomy of Sheds, it's sometimes difficult to identify a common kind of pedal tone running through them, even though on first glance, many of them, your internal voice says, oh, that's a shed. For you, what defines a shed? What do they all have in common?
I think they're very individual spaces. There's not many architectural spaces which are solitary, which are an individual creative expression and usually just for one person. And also they're small structures separate from a larger main building where you might live or work. So I am quite liberal with my interpretation of shed. I mean, there is a caravan in there, and in a way I feel tree houses are sheds up trees. So it is more the small scale and the single pursuit in either its use or design, which I feel is a shed. And also, I feel if the design element has to be good too. So it's a combination of the human factor of what it's used for and the scale and the architecture, and combine all that together in this singular, purposeful building.
So maybe you can illustrate some of those qualities by telling me about a few of your favourite sheds which are featured in the book. Tell me about them and what you like about them and why you think they're exemplars of good shed design.
Sure, sure. The first favourite of mine is the one that's actually on the cover, which is Paul Smith, the designer's shed, which apart from being exquisitely simple and beautiful, uses materials in an extraordinary good way. And the building is, interestingly, the same size as his first shop in Nottingham, right from where he began. And coincidentally, it's 3 metres square, and coincidentally, that's the size of his favourite Matisse painting. So I love it that there's those different cultural, historical and design references coming together in one sort of perfect little space.
Excellent. Any more that catch your eye in there or that you're particularly fond of?
Yeah, there's several. There's one backyard shed in San Francisco that Caitlin Long has, and it's always inspiring. Although there are sort of great architectural examples, it is lovely to actually see what people do in their backyards with very small means. And she's created the most beautiful space for all her family to either go do their homework or hang out. And it's the design features as a beautiful wood-burning stove with an angled flue and a slate wall. And it is the most lovely, lovely piece of design.
Excellent. So you mentioned the human element, as you put it, of a shed's appeal, then it being a space for perhaps a single pursuit or a single purpose. Do you think that's the main component of sheds' enduring appeal? I mean, they've been around for so long, and so many sheds have been connected to famous people as places where they do their work, where they do their thinking, where they get away from things and enter their own world. Do you think that's the main component of the appeal of sheds through the ages?
I think it is. I think it calls to us in a very simple and heartfelt way. I think the fact that it's something that's achievable to people, I think it harks back, it makes people feel that they have a sense of themselves and a sense of place. And I think the fact that that can be achieved in a inexpensive and stylish way is something that's incredibly appealing to people. I feel that post-recession, there's a great demand to create more from less. And I think the shed's re-emergence and this new popularity, I think Echoes resonates with that. I think people feel they don't have to have much. They can have this small building in their garden, start a business, write a book, chill out, paint a picture, just go and have fun. I think it gives people a great sense of worth and achievement.
And finally, I know there's a very diverse range of design styles and features exhibited in the sheds in your book, but does it make sense to say that there's a shed aesthetic or a shed vernacular which distinguishes sheds as a form of architecture from other forms?
I think that's a very interesting question, and I often ask myself that same point. I think this simple shed shape with this pitched roof, simple form, no guttering or details, simple materials. I think that shed vernacular is extremely powerful. And I think if you mix that with clever design and good choice of materials, then it's something which is very, very powerful. I mean, going back to this Paul Smith shed, if you were just to draw a shed, that's what you would draw. It's that childlike drawing. And it's just this, within that simple form, the variations with purpose, function and materials are incredibly rich creative ground.
Jane Field Lewis there. The Anatomy of Sheds is published by Pavilion and will be released in the UK on the 13th of October. Back now to Maison et Objet in Paris. As per usual, Danish design was a key feature in the show. But while established brands took safer bets on updating their collections, fledgling companies like We Do Wood were offering more daring takes on classic design. The brand's designer, Sebastian Jürgensen, talked Nolan Giles through his flat, packable safari chair and lent some tips on how to edit classic design for a contemporary audience.
The secret of it is that you have this belt or armrest, whatever you want. If you pop this open here, you know, you can take these apart. And then you got then you're actually broken down the chair. We had this Danish architect called Clint. He's very famous for his furniture. He took this chair back in, this style of chair back in 1933. And he kind of cleaned it up. And it's called the Safari chair. It's world famous. And I grew up with that chair. And I always loved it. I mean, I love the way, and also I go hunting a lot and, you know, set up camps out in the woods and stuff and all that. So I always love these kind of furnitures. So I had to have my go on it, you know.
So how did you tinker with the original classic design?
I tinkered with it in a way that I think that the one that Cole Clinton made, the way you sat in it was not too well. It was a very beautiful chair, but you couldn't sit in it that long. So I, you know, I just made it more modern in the proportions and the armrests and are different, and I think you have great seating comfort in that one, actually. Originally, it's called a rookie chair or field chair, and then the Danish architect, he called it the safari chair. And so, not to, what do you say, pamper with that, we called it the nomad chair.
because it's a new generation, and what people do today is they move a lot. You know, they go from city to city, from country to city, from one country to another country. You know, I know a lot of my friends. They don't live in Copenhagen anymore. They live a couple of years in Paris, then they move back, and you know, so that's the new way, the nomad living.
I can totally agree with you on that. I just moved from Singapore to London, so it's like that would have been ideal in my pack, and I could have stuck it on the plane
exactly.
with me.
And that's the same thing with, you know, with these shelves. They're easy to break down, and you know, that's a lot of it is easy to break down. You know, I guess it's just our generation. I mean, the way we live.
So, as a Danish designer, what drew you to bamboo as a material to work with?
Oh, it's just I kind of stumbled on it, and then I was thinking about this sustainability, and you know, I thought something has to be done, and you know, there's big companies, you know, people just buy stuff and throw it out, and I'm just really tired of that. And as a cabinet maker, thinking about this oak tree has been living for 100 years before we cut it down, and cutting down a tree, this maybe 60% of waste. Of course, you burn it or produce energy out of it. Before you get a board into the shop, the workshop, and you know, there's so much waste. And I just thought that, you know, we could do this better. We shouldn't cut down all the trees in this world, you know. It takes many, many years for them to come back, you know. So I thought bamboo stem is 4 years old and then you harvest it, you know. There's hardly any waste on it. Of course, there's some waste. There's waste on everything. But it's just as hard as oak, you know. It's a really good material.
What are the qualities of the wood that make it so usable for your furniture?
One of the qualities is that the fibers are so straight. So you can count on them, you know. Look at this shelf, see how thin it is. It's only 10 mil. And it's actually 70 centimeters wide. And it's really stable.
And how's it being received?
I think people are starting to accept bamboo, you know, as another option, like oak or beech or whatever. First, people thought it was some kind of gimmick. But I think it's here to stay because it's such a lovely and honest material.
Can you tell us about the initial formation of the brand? You know, you obviously saw a gap in the market for this sort of product, but what led you to create We Do Wood?
Just the fact that I can't help myself. I have to build furniture. You know, I've always been building stuff. As I told you earlier, before I was making sculptures, I've always been creating and building stuff.
And your designs, in a way, they are quite classic. I mean, what are the inspirations that you have taken from your heritage?
I grew up with the classic Danish design, and I think it's just this, kind of because I grew up with it, it's the way that I look at things. It's honest design. I mean, like this showing things, you know, showing the details. There's a purpose why it looks like it. It's both ornament, but it is also function. Yeah, I just try to make things that are honest in a way.
Sebastian Jurgensen there, speaking to Nolan Giles. And that's all we've got time for on this week's show. My thanks to our editors, Alex Funnell and Toby Hammond. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to write to me. I'm at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. In the meantime, you can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud and iTunes. And please leave us a review on the latter. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rhys Sheridan. And until next time, it's goodbye from me.